Welcome to Restore, a podcast seeking to restore the vision, restore the mission, restore the church. And now your host, Javier Diaz.
Happy New Year, everyone, and welcome to the Restore Podcast, episode 31. My name is Javier, and I am your host. It's hard to believe, but here we are, January 2019. It is our desire as you start the new year that this podcast will continue through the different conversations and their particular emphasis be a catalyst to help you restore the vision, restore the mission, restore the church. As always, I want to thank you for listening and sharing the Restore Podcast. On today's episode, we kick off the new year with a conversation that I had with Associate Communications Professor at Andrews University, Dr. Heather Thompson Day. We get to know a bit more about her and her journey, and then we get into how to better communicate in the 21st century. I also want to thank my friend, Pastor Rodley Ortiz, who joined as a co-host for this episode. At the end of this conversation, I'll let you know how to get Heather's new book that is just being released this month. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Dr. Heather Thompson Day. Well, I want to welcome Heather and Rodley to the Restore Podcast. Welcome, guys.
Happy to be here.
Good morning.
Rodley and I, for those that may know us, Rodley and I go back a while. So, Rodley, I'm you know, before we get into Heather, Heather is the special guest. Rodley, not so special, but nonetheless. and like I said, I love Rodley. Rodley's like a brother. I've known him for a long time. I think I've said this story before about you, Rodley, but the last time you were on, which was a while back with Dwight, and as a side aspect, just this morning as we're recording this, you put out that Dwight was injured. So I know by the time this is released, it will probably be several weeks from the injury, but nonetheless, when you hear this, we want you to pray for Pastor Dwight, as I know that he'll probably still be recovering even when this is released, right? You know, Rodley, you want to speak into that?
Sure. Yeah, we were ice skating on Sunday. We're having a pastoral service with all the Pioneer Memorial Church pastors, and he slipped on ice and he injured his hip and his shoulder. And he had hip surgery already. He's having shoulder surgery as we speak right now. So, yeah, I think he'll be a little bit of recovery and definitely needs prayers.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. And again, by the time this is released, I know it would have been several weeks, but nonetheless, we want to continue to pray for him even as you're listening to this. But with that said, what I was going to say about you, Rodley, is that a long time ago when we first started at a little school called Southern Adventist University, I remember being in class and we were just starting to in the theology department, and I had come back from this big comeback to Jesus story that I had, and so I'm sitting there with all these theology students, and I'm just thinking, man, they're going to be the most exciteful, just friendly people in the world. No offense to any theology students, because I was obviously one of them, but nobody really came up to me or vice versa, you know, or anything of that nature, except there was one person that sat next to me and was the only individual that actually, because most people knew each other because I came into the program, and I think Rodley, you did as well. But Rodley did. He sat next to me, and he actually said, "Hey, hi, how are you?" And you were the first person. I always tell this story that said hello to me. From then on, we just kind of, though we had our different, you know, realms, we always remained friends. So I really appreciate your friendship, Rodley, and thanks for co-hosting with us this day.
Yeah, likewise, and definitely my pleasure.
Absolutely. But now to the star of our episode today, Dr. Heather Thompson. Thank you so much for being on and taking of your time. I'm excited about this episode. I'm going to go ahead and say it. I said I was going to wait, but I just can't because I just feel prompted. I'm a little nervous. I was telling her.
It's okay. So do I.
I was telling her beforehand, and again, I've mentioned this from time to time, and someday I may record an episode about it, but I've stuttered my whole life, and so, and I have had to some great communication professors in my life that have helped me with that, right? One of them I was just talking to you about was
one at Southern. And then when I was a kid growing up, there weren't so much communication professors. There were obviously teachers that along the way helped, and I was blessed by that part. So with that said, I know we're not going to talk so much about stuttering or anything of that nature, but we're going to talk about communicating in today's world. But before we do that, I always like to begin with just us getting to know a little bit about Dr. Heather Thompson. And you want us to call you Heather, so we're going to go Heather. Tell us a little bit about yourself, where you come from, how you got to Andrews University besides a plane or a car. Why would you want to live in such cold weather? But I'm biased because I'm in Florida. And so tell us a little bit about yourself.
Right. Well, for starters, I live in Berrien Springs because I was born in Berrien Springs. And okay. I have a very, very close family, maybe too close. And I tried, actually, before I took this job at Andrews, I was offered a job at Taylor, which is near Indianapolis, another Christian school. And I was going to be moving 2 hours. And my dad freaked out. And then he said, I'm praying. And so I felt like he was praying against me. And it was really weird. I was already going. And then all of a sudden, the dean at Andrews, who I'd actually never met, showed up at my house. And said, we have a job opening at Andrews, and we heard about you, and we'd love you to come check us out. And so I knew that God had just interceded in my life. And so here I am in the cold still, wow. And with mom and dad. So that's nice. They're happy.
So you are I don't even know how to say it. So if I say it wrong, you can correct me. You are a Berrienite. I mean, how do you say that? You were born and bred
sure.
in Berrien.
I'm an OG. That's how I say it. I'm an OG of Berrien Springs.
Okay. Wow.
I ran for Miss Berrien Springs, okay? So I am very popular here.
Okay. All right.
I'm a big deal in Berrien Springs High School.
All right. Okay, so you're born and bred there in Berrien Springs. And so what was it like growing up there?
Berrien, what I will say, is a very sheltered environment, but also a very diverse environment where I think creativity is often explored. And yeah. So those are some of the things I like about it. It's also excruciatingly cold and dark and drear. So what it lacks for in weather, you have to make up for in personality of the people who come. So I think we do that well.
You do. And I mean, obviously having studied there, I will concur. Some of the best years that my wife and I had were at Berrien Springs, and my wife graduated from Andrews, so that as
okay.
well. So absolutely. So in that journey growing up there, what led you to communications? Let me go back. How did you meet your husband and all of that? How did that go about?
Oh. Well, this is actually a really great story.
We want to get to know you a little bit. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Then we'll get into all the communication part. This is what people really want to hear, Heather. The rest is just gravy.
This is like one of my best testimonies, actually, about my husband. Okay. So I met my husband in the sixth grade at Ruth Murdoch Elementary School, and I loved him. I loved him, and we used to meet at the park, and we would go on the swings together, and we were madly in love. And then his mom finished school, and they moved away, and I never saw him again. And wow. then my sophomore year of college, I had just transferred to Andrews, because Andrews was the one school I swore I would never go to, because it was in Berrien Springs. So I went away at a track scholarship in Indiana. I ended up deciding I wasn't going to run track anymore because of some injuries. And so I came to Andrews and I saw Seth Day sitting in the financial aid office. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my gosh, he's still so cute. So I did something that you probably shouldn't do, because my mom was the financial director at the time. So I wrote down my number on a piece of paper. And I was like, hey, you should totally call me sometime. It'd be really cool. And I gave the note to my mom to give to him.
Did you do it with that voice and everything, or with
exactly.
that?
That's literally how I taught. So I gave the note to my mom, and she passed it to him, and then he never called me. Right?
Wow.
So really embarrassing. And then I watch him, and he's walking across campus with this little blonde girl, and I was like, okay, cool. I don't actually like you. I was just joking. And so for like 2 years, then I met somebody else, and I actually got engaged. And it was 2 months before my wedding. My dad said to me, I really want you to just make sure you pray about this. I don't know if this is the person for you. And so long story short, I prayed that night. My parents were going out of town. I I told God, if this isn't the person that you have for me, then can you please end this relationship? Because I don't know if I'm strong enough to do it. And literally, I'm not making this up. Within five minutes of saying amen, my phone rang and it was my fiance and he was calling to break up with me.
Wow.
And I was like, okay, I knew he was going to call me back because we were one of those couples who like break up to make up. To break up, it feels so good to be in a relationship so wrong. We were one of those couples, but I knew that when he called me back, that God had just told me that this you're not supposed to marry this person. And so it's like 1 a.m., I'm sobbing in my bed, I'm staring at my wedding dress, and I'm like, God, this is so embarrassing. I've invited people to my wedding. I have bridesmaids who bought dresses. Like, can you just have mercy on me? And my phone rings again. And I thought, okay, this is my fiance and I'm not going to go back with him. I'm going to be strong. And I answer the phone and the voice on the other end is not my fiance. It was Seth Day. He had that little note that I gave him for 2 years in his backpack. And he felt like he should call me on the very night that I ended my engagement. And he came and saw me the next day. And I have been with him ever since.
Wow.
So that is my story and why I, just for anybody who's listening, I firmly believe that we should surrender all of our romantic relationships to God. And I believe that he will act on your behalf.
That's powerful. I'm glad I asked that question because that's communication right there. That's communicating something powerful. And so praise the Lord. We're so glad that you shared that with us and I appreciate that. And, I have a quick, follow up with that. So maybe you don't want to share, but what was that? And it's okay if you don't. There's only several hundreds of people, you know, that will be listening, if not more. But what was that initial conversation like? Because I don't know. So I have to imagine, you know, obviously, you're very, like anybody would, male or female, be emotional after a breakup like that. And then the guy that from sixth grade, you have, you know, known calls you at the right time. What was that conversation like? You don't have to give details, but, you know, thoughts, emotions.
Here's the thing. And actually, I will swing this back to communication. My husband has really taught me this, especially he's an introvert. But a lot of that first conversation and our conversations in the weeks to come was a lot of me crying and him listening. And here's the thing about communication that people get wrong. People always think that the best communicators are the best talkers. And it's not true. The best communicators are the people who know when to be silent and when to leave a space for silence in a conversation. That is the art of successful communication. And my husband is so good at that.
Wow. So he was able to listen at the right time while you spoke and said whatever you had to say at that time. Wonderful. And I think, thank you for sharing again with that. And you have kids, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. How many kids are you?
Like 8.
8. Okay.
I have 3 children.
All right. Awesome. Boy, girls, how many?
I have 2 boys and a girl. My daughter is 7. My middle son is 5. And my baby, he's not a baby anymore, but he is to me. He's 2.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, you are definitely busy as I've looked online seen. It seems that you are obviously an associate professor at Andrews. You've written like 38 books. Okay, maybe not 30, but like 6. You're about to release your next book, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. If you want to give a little shout out, we'd love for you to tell us about the latest book. And you also have a blog that you're doing a magazine with.
Know my whole life.
I tell people I have to do research when you do a podcast. It's not like I can just not, it's part of what we do. You know, this is episode 31 here coming up. So people expect that and to some, you know, degree. But so you are amazingly doing incredible things. And so I just before we get into communication, because I think it's great to know about the person as we jump into that. And you already started. But Raleigh's going to kick us off here in a second with the opening line question here about, you know, communication. But tell us a little bit about your faith journey as we jump into that. Because when we talk about communication, we're going to be talking a lot about that intersection, right? So not just communicating, but also communicating within the essence of, the gospel. But so as we jump into that, if you're okay with that, share us a little bit about your faith journey growing up in the Mecca of Berrien Springs or wherever else your journey has taken you.
Yeah. So growing up, I mean, I'm one of those kids that has always had a personal relationship with Christ. And it's actually only been in the last few years that I've realized how many of my students will tell me that, like, they've never felt him, which is so opposite of my experience because I've always felt him. I mean, I was like 5, 6, 7 years old. And I remember like having deep, deep communication with God. My dad was an evangelist. So I grew up, I always tell people I pretty much grew up in a van because we were gone every single weekend speaking at churches all over the country. And then we would go international as well. And my dad's one rule, I told you my family is very close. So his one rule was, I will not go where my family can't join me. And so we all always packed up in a van and went out together to do ministry with him. And so I grew up watching the Holy Spirit move in churches, but I also have been in churches where I didn't see the Holy Spirit. Wow. And I think that's all part of how I've been shaped, because I've been in secular classrooms I've taught at Purdue University, and I've been in secular classrooms where I have seen God more than I've seen him in some churches. So I just think the Holy Spirit goes where people's hearts are open to him. So
Heather, you've told us a little bit about your faith story and your journey, how you got to start teaching at Andrews University. But why don't we just take a moment to define the term of communication? I mean, what is it? Why study it? Suppose you're talking to a biology pre-med major and they're saying, look, I'm going to be a physician. Why should I care about communication?
Yeah. And I actually have to have this conversation all the time. So here's the thing. Most people will say that they are competent communicators, and the average person is completely incompetent when it comes to communication. The definition of competent communication is having the ability to change your message to fit your audience. And especially today, I think most of us are being raised in a culture of, listen, if you don't understand what I said, that's not my problem, that's your problem. And what I would like to pivot to, okay, is whose problem is it? Because if you are the person with a message to be communicated and you are not able to articulate that in a way that somebody can understand it, it actually does become your problem. Right. So I think it is something that and of course, we all are in relationships and all. I mean, multiple studies show that the quality of your life is directly related to the quality of your communication. And I teach this, so I know I'm really biased, but I think it is one of the most important areas of study because we're human beings and we were created and wired to be relational with one another. And so if the way that I'm communicating can help or hurt my relationships, why would I not want to investigate ways to help me have better, more positive relationships?
You just made me think, Heather and Javier, about a definition for preaching that Carrie Newhoff, he has this great little definition for preaching where he says preaching is when you deliver what people need to hear in a way that they want to hear it, right? So in other words, it's not just about expository preaching or whatever, but you're delivering this content in engaging and in a unique way. Because I think sometimes we think that I'm just going to say it in whatever way, devoid of context. So that's helpful.
Yeah, I think something that we don't think about as far as I'm really interested a lot in like neurology and how especially like my brain can best process information. I dipped into a little bit of neuroscience for my dissertation on the study of stories and how our brains process stories. But I think also what people don't understand with communication is that less is always more. So your brain can only remember about 30 seconds worth of anything that I say. And imagine, and I speak all the time too, if I'm giving a sermon that's 45 minutes, they're going to remember 30 seconds. So I think it would be really good for speakers to remember that and to organize your material. So I typically, if I'm speaking, I say the same thing over and over again in multiple different ways that I know you'll understand. Because it doesn't matter if I have a fantastic sermon if nobody can remember it.
Wow. So maybe some of your students may ask, okay, so if that's true, then why do we have to sit in class for an hour or an hour and a half?
Right, because we're learning how to communicate with one another. And and at least in my class, it's never just you listening to me talk. We have discussion constantly where you turn to a partner and we try some of the communication techniques that we're talking about. But like I said, I had when I first started in education, and this is somebody who hadn't even studied some of like the neuroscience of communication, but I had a professor who said to me that she just always says her class will be successful if that student will remember three things. So if you're in an hour and a half lecture, and I've remembered that my whole teaching career, thinking, there's an entire chapter I'm covering today, but truly, what are the three things that if they can really internalize this, I know it will change the course of wherever they're going when they leave here. So I think all of us as communicators have to learn how to chunk the most pertinent information. And so there's a variety of strategies that we can do in communication that will help you learn to do that more effectively.
So Heather, when you are visiting a church out there somewhere, right, and you hear the pastor get up and he says, "Today I want to share with you 10 strategies for such and such," you think what?
I think that would be a really great series, and not necessarily the best sermon.
Wow!
Right. So typically, like I just did a sermon last week, this Sabbath. Called Blind Before the Breakthrough. And literally, I say the same thing over and over and over again, but I am finding different ways to say it. Does that make sense? So I just keep repeating the same point. And then by the time they leave, multiple people, they know exactly what the main point that I was trying to get across was, right? And that's actually going to be more beneficial, because typically what we actually remember is just how somebody made us feel, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we all know this. When you listen to other people speak, it's not necessarily that you remember all their content. You just remember how they made you feel. Like, wow, that person, they were engaging. They made me feel passionate. It's not necessarily that remembering the words.
Wow. There are like a million things going through my mind right now. And I'm glad I have some notes to keep me focused, because I'm listening to you. And I look back and all I'm thinking is like, man, I've made so many mistakes as I've spoken in different places. To be honest, like in the last, I would be transparent enough to say more in the last year, and I'm still working on it. I've really tried to, as I speak in different places, to change that. And for those that are listening, I haven't arrived there yet. So if I preached like 6 months ago, I need to do better, as in more as in time, and doing exactly is, it's, you know, really interesting that you mentioned this, to kind of saying the same thing, but in different ways, but all pointing back. And as speakers and preachers and those of us that may have taken classes in that, particularly at Southern or some other places, like, we kind of use that bullet point, right? You know, the main idea that as communicators, we're trying to communicate. And then from that, find different ways of restating it, as you're mentioning it again and again. You really hit me when you say the quality of your life, and maybe I got it wrong, so you can correct me. The quality of your life relates what you communicate. And then you also defined having, communication, having the ability to change your message to touch your audience. To fit your audience. So let's go there. Mm-hmm. You know, communication is changing, right? I mean, with social media and the last, what can we say? Particularly, I would say in the last 8 to 10 years, that's just really evolved. Maybe I'm wrong with that time frame. But tell us, and you've already, you already have somewhat, but tell us maybe more or expand on this.
I'd love to. This is something I love talking about, actually. So here's one of the biggest ways communication, I think, has changed since the mobile revolution, since about the year 2000. Studies have shown that the average attention span today is 8 seconds. Hmm. Right?
8 seconds.
People are only able to pay attention to us. And by the way, a goldfish has an attention span of 9 seconds. The average attention span before the year 2000 was about 12 seconds, right? So we've decreased by 4 seconds in just, in like 2 decades, which is crazy. So how do we how do we, of course, we have so many issues with differences and division when nobody's listening to anybody. And I can only pay attention to somebody for about 8 seconds before my mind starts wandering and thinking about what I'm going to say next. Mm-hmm. Right. So, and that's why I think a lot of times, again, we think that we look at communication a lot and we think about talking, and it's the most, the best communicators are the best listeners. It's not about talking. It's about listening to your partner. So really quickly, like a strategy that you can use if you're having conflict with your partner or with somebody is you sit down and you say, okay, the people understand we're going to have a conversation, and you commit to never talking for more than 30 seconds. Right. So you, because my brain can only remember 30 seconds of information anyway. So you commit to never talking for more than 30 seconds, and you never say anything that isn't directly related to what your partner has just said. Mm. And try that for 25 minutes. And I promise you, every time people do this, they say it was the best conversation I've had in a long time. And I had no idea that my partner felt this way. Because often, and you know this, we all know this, there's always internal dialogue. And we're thinking about how we're going to respond while somebody else is still talking. We're not listening. We're having an internal dialogue in ourselves. And so when we train our brains to say, I am only going to respond based, that has to do with something that you just said, I'm not at liberty to say whatever I want to say. And I have to listen to what you're communicating to me.
Hmm. So Heather, what about the art of communicating with each other? So you've given us kind of a principle there that sounds like, okay, active listening, in quiet, reflecting, but what about this art of just listening to each other and communicating to each other?
Yeah, and here's something that I know just in regular conversation, you can probably tell already that I struggle with, and I have to make a mental note to myself, is to slow down. Mm-hmm. I am naturally a really fast speaker. Every time I ever took a speech class, that was the comment that was written on my paper.
I think in part is because I'm Cuban and Hispanic, so I mean obviously that, you know, that adds to it, which, and I don't mean to, just to interject, it's funny you say that, because that was like one of the main things that they also told me and professors would say, and it was ingrained in me growing up. You know, my family, we all talk fast and we're all talking to each other and across the rooms, like just a good Hispanic family. And I don't know if you've ever, been in those situations where somebody's talking across the room from each other, and we're talking so fast. And so I I'm sorry to, interject here, but that's something I relate, and I've been working so hard at slowing down, and obviously helps me to process things better. So I'm glad I'm not the only one who struggles with that. And so a professor at Andrews struggles with it. I feel better now. Thank you, Heather. Yeah. Proceed.
And so here's a strategy for you then that you can try is you put a 3 to 4 second pause in between each word and have a conversation with your wife, just one sentence at a time, but with a 3 to 4 second pause in between each word. And what happens, it's crazy. Your brain will start panicking about what you're supposed to say next and about the pause that you're creating. And what you're trying to do is train your brain that it's okay to slow down and to be present and to not be thinking about what I'm going to say next, but to just focus on this word. And what happens is we actually say more by saying less.
By the way, Heather, this topic that you just mentioned is so fascinating to me because, I've been here at Pioneer working with Pastor Dwight for 7 years now, and I didn't really notice this until a few months in working with him that I noticed that he never uses the word right? So often when we're talking, when we're thinking about what we're going to say next, because he's been doing this for a long time and involved in the art of and science of communication, he has learned to completely excise that filler from his vocabulary, which fascinates me. And he does exactly what you just said. He's not afraid to just pause and say nothing.
Yes. Yes. And that's what an effective communicator does. And your brain loves it. When somebody pauses, studies show it actually brings my attention back into the conversation when somebody else's pause. We think if I keep talking and I get all these words out, then they're going to understand what I'm saying better. Studies show actually pausing, you see what I'm doing, I'm being dramatic, pausing forces your brain to come back to my present conversation and to pay attention to me again. It's fascinating to me.
Yeah, this whole conversation is fascinating to me, and I'm trying to pause, and then Rodley brings up the and so you know, I've listened to myself enough on this podcast to go, I need to stop saying or stop saying this or that. But it's what we do, and since these we try to make them as we're doing here, even though we have a specific topic and then content being released, we try to have a conversation. And so in my conversations, again, because I try to talk fast, and I've really had to learn to slow down. And then my restlessness is just part of my nature. You know, I was sitting next to somebody in a staff meeting here at the conference office, I'm moving my leg, and she just slightly taps it, right? Like, and then she laughs, and I said, you know, my wife does the same thing, and she was just laughing, and I said, but that's just me. When I speak, I got to move. And in part, I move, and people don't realize this, and now I'm just exposing myself here, because it helps me to not you know, stutter. And so people don't get that. That's something personal. Maybe people move because that's what they do. It moves because it releases my tension. And I've been doing this for 20 years, I mean, give or take. And so, but it's still something that I struggle with. But what has helped me, I say all that, because what you're saying, even if you don't stutter, which most people don't, is so powerful, to pause and slow down. Because that's the two things you were just talking about, pause and slow down. And it's helped me with the ums and the but, and my wife, I remember in a sermon, she wrote down every single time I said, like, you know, or or whatever. And I just said, Can you please be merciful to me and not put them all together?
Right.
And of course, people will come out and say, Pastor, that was a great sermon. And praise the Lord, God works through all of that.
Yes.
But we as communicators want to get better. So I really appreciate you pointing that out, and ways that you're speaking to me. And that I could, there it is. You see, that I could improve. So yeah, go ahead.
Well, let me say something. I just found this study that I really appreciated, because a lot of times we feel pressure to be perfect. And I just found this study where Harvard researchers found that we actually like people more when we believe that they are competent but imperfect, right? So what they did was they had people do an interview, and if you were competent in the interview and then spilled coffee on yourself in the interview, those were the people that they wanted to give the job to. So you may think that your stutter is like this big disability, but actually, as long as I think that you're competent, it actually will make me like you more, because I know all the insecurities that I have about myself. So when I see that you're not perfect, that makes me feel more connected to you, not less. And in this age of like social media and Instagram, everybody's trying to be perfect. And I hope that it comes across in my social media. I try to be really honest about the areas of my life and my writing where it's not perfect, because I know how important that is for people. So I don't think you should always try to like fix everything.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah.
And Heather, I'm just curious about what you just said. The idea of kind of authenticity in communication, right? And how mistakes can kind of engender you to your audience. And I'm just wondering, do you think that's more of a function of a recent trend in how culture is changing? Yeah. Or is that something, my sense coming from a church world is that there was a time with the rise of the megachurch movement, for example, in which kind of perfection and just being really excellent and all these kinds of things were the things that everybody tried to aspire to. But I certainly have a sense in society that the value of authenticity has kind of risen above that.
Yeah, I'm positive in working with these young people that more than anything, what they want is authenticity. And especially if we're talking about Christianity, I really think that that's, well, I know from reading the data from the Barna Group that that's one of the reasons they say they're leaving, is because they, and I've written articles about this, why are Christians so fake? We feel this need that we feel this need to be perfect. And if somebody sees that I'm not, then they'll think that God's not with me. But it's far more powerful to be honest about my weaknesses so that people can see, wow, God can use even them, than God can use me. And I know this As somebody who grew up in church school, I always felt like God wasn't for me. In the sense that when I would see the kids that were like the spiritual kids in class, even though I've always had a personal relationship with God, when I looked at like the Bible leader in class, he didn't look anything like me, right? They didn't communicate like me. The vernacular that they used wasn't like mine. And so I just think God, and God needs those people too. Like, he needs all of us to be authentic with where we are at. And because there's certain people that he's trying to connect you to that only you can reach, right? And the language that we use is very much important to that.
Yeah. Heather, tell us more about that. And I really appreciate Raleigh's, you know, question there. With that being that you, obviously you teach there, you're focusing on millennials and you interact with, you know, Generation Z as well, obviously. So what advice would you give preachers, teachers, you know, leaders in the local church at, you know, large, to help clearly communicate, and I'm going to be specific here. This is the Restore podcast, and the gospel is center to everything that we do. We're here to restore the vision, restore the mission, restore the church. We are the church, so it's us that we're restoring to be kingdom, you know, builders. So how can we better communicate the gospel as a whole, and specifically, I would say, with millennials and Generation Z? I know that's kind of a two-prong loaded question, but there it is.
Yeah. So a couple things, and I've gotten in trouble for saying this. I'm going to say it anyway, and you can edit it out if you don't like it. But I think we have to stop telling young people that they need church, and we need to start telling them why the church needs them. And I think that shift is very important to them. I've started this thing at Andrews that I affectionately refer to as God's in the Basement, because we meet in the basement of the campus center. There is no microphone. There is no sound system. There's no fog machine. It's just about 30 to 50 of us, and we have a conversation. And most of the times that we meet, we cry together, because they are so hungry for authentic relationship. I am from a generation of programming. That was one thing. My dad was an evangelist. That's something that he really ingrained in me, is like, you have to have an excellent program. And these kids keep telling me, we don't want a program. I don't want a program. I just want a relationship. I just want a safe space to talk about what God isn't doing in my life, and then what he's doing, right? So just a place where there's no pressure, and we allow the Holy Spirit to be free enough to do the work. I think a lot of times we try to do the work for the Holy Spirit instead of like just trusting God to show up. If I just, as a human being, show up in a relationship with somebody and not trying to shove things down their throat, but telling them what I found in my life and what's worked for me. And maybe it's not going to work for you, but let me walk this journey with you, whether you stay or go. Let me just walk with you in it. That's what they need. And that's what will be attractive to them.
Heather, it kind of sounds like what you're saying is, right, like going back to the megachurch movement, fog machines, the cool church, right, the cool pastor in, you know, the tight jeans and flip-flops or whatever, and the idea of, you know, Barna talked about this, began talking about this, that warm is the new cool, right? But what I wanted to ask you is the idea of, what do you think about the concept of that the messenger is actually part of the message? So as a preacher, do you believe that there's actually correlation there in people first believing the messenger?
Yeah, I absolutely think that there's correlation there. I think, here's the thing, and this is what I think none of us really want to hear when this is what we do is speak, but the reality is these kids can go on YouTube and listen to the best speaker literally in the country in their underwear on their couch. So they're not going to church to listen to my sermon. If they're showing up to church, it's not about that. It's because they need the relationship in the community, because they can get a better sermon on YouTube, right? So we can download a sermon. We can't download relationships, and they know it. And so they are looking for safe spaces where they can connect. And I'm telling you, it's crazy, because I work at Andrews, and I can't tell you how many students tell me that they don't have conversations with their friends about God. Wow. And I'm like, no, like, are you kidding? Like, I can't believe, because I went to, long story short, I was the only student to be ever kicked out of Ruth Murdoch Elementary School in eighth grade. So I was, I went to public school, and I so desperately always craved to be back, like, in a faith-based community. And I didn't have that in really formative years of my life. And so when I look at these kids who have, like, had it their whole lives and they don't even, they don't use it, I'm like, what is happening? So I think all, as a mentor myself, I think we think that they're having these conversations on their own, and they're not. And so what they need is an adult in the room to say, like, hey, let's talk about this. And then they want to talk about it, but they don't know how to bring up those conversations on their own.
Heather, could I ask you to repeat just one little bit? Because for those listening right now, you couldn't hear my little silent golf clap as Heather said something really profound. You said people, young adults, college students can listen to the best sermon in the world in their underwear. So they're not going to church for the sermon. You said instead they're going to church, what did you say, for community and relationships, something like that?
Why else would I go? And I think, and this is what we don't get, like, our churches are dying, and here's why. They don't need even, I mean, they don't need us to be excellent speakers. If you are, that's awesome. But honestly, they don't need it, because they can listen to Stephen Furtick on YouTube. What they need is us to be leaders who create a safe community that they feel invited and included in and have a seat at the table. So many of them, and you hear it all, I'm sure you hear it, where they're like, we just want a seat at the table. We just want to tell you what we're thinking. And oftentimes we tokenize young people, I think, where we pick the ones that are safe, and we allow them to have input. And the best thing I've ever done, at least with our little Vespers here on campus, was I went to the kids that you would never see leading in chapel. And I asked them what they wanted. And they were the ones that told me, we want a place that we can just have a discussion. And I was like, this probably isn't going to work in my mind, because I'm a program person. I was like, you just want to sit down in a basement in the dark and talk? Yo, we sit in the basement and talk, and I'm telling you, God is in the basement. And it's really taught me that the Holy Spirit is so able and willing to do the work if we would just allow more a better space for them to tell us what they need.
So I don't know, but I'm envisioning many pastors and leaders, they're listening to this hopefully, and they're both being inspired and at the same time being challenged, right? And what they do, because we have people who listen from just different backgrounds. I'm blessed in what I do. Nearly every Sabbath, I'm at a different church, from all different ethnic backgrounds and ways of how they do quote unquote church, right? And so I'll go to a church that has 40 people, and then I've you know, last week as I was at a church that had their attendance on regular two services, and it's got 700, 800 people, one of the bigger churches in here in, you know, Florida, with a lot of young people, young adults, generation. I mean, I was literally sitting and next to me there were, I don't know their exact age, but I'm pretty sure that they were at least half my age, you know, give or take. And I'm 20. So they were, no, I'm just kidding. They were at least half my age. And then behind me, there were some other, you know, people. And this was, again, a lot of young people. And so my follow-up question to that is, as leaders and pastors in a local church, as they're listening to this and they're saying what they want is authenticity, they're not there for a sermon, they're not there for, you know, programs. What would you suggest now, as a follow-up, some like really practical advice to how to create that, right? I think pastors, I'm assuming somebody is going to go out there and try to meet young people in a basement somewhere saying, well, if they did it, you know, maybe we can do it. If now in Florida, there's not too many basements, right? But I don't know how they'll figure that out. But you know what I'm trying to say is like, how would that work for a church of 40? How would that work for a church of 1,000? Like I've been in churches where you know, sometimes on the other end, the church actually has a lot of young adults. We rarely hear this because we always hear the other side. There's no young people in our churches. And for the most part, that is, you know, absolutely true. But I've been to churches here. Granted, some are institutional churches where there's a lot, you know, a university next to it, kind of like PMC, but outside of Berrien Springs and stuff, here in, you know, Florida, a lot of young people. But when I go in there, And others have told me the same thing, to be honest. When I've spoken to other young people, sometimes it's hard for them to connect with other young people because there's, can I say it? There's cliques, there's cliches, there's not, you know, actual, you know, there's people, they already know each other. It's a big group, but they already know each other. So somebody coming in, like the gospel, reaching people with the gospel outside of our confines. Sometimes when they come into our confines, unless it's a friend or somebody you're inviting that you already know, it's hard to jump in. Am I making sense? And so they're looking for that. But sometimes how do we help with that? Not only in a big church where everybody knows your name, kind of like Barron Springs or anybody else, but also in a church anywhere in, you know, that has the average church. And the Adventist church is what, maybe 100 or less, give or take. Mm-hmm. So how do they create those environments? I know I said a lot there, but how what would you recommend for them to help in that aspect to touch the gospel to these younger, you know, generation that are leaving our church? And even the ones that are there, how would you challenge them to step out of their own box?
Yeah, and that's why I said what we really need is not necessarily like these fantastic orators, but we need leaders. I mean, this is true of this generation. I'm like, when we look at the studies of them in the workplace, it's the same thing. Their biggest fear is that no one will mentor them. This is a generation, it is like they have so many fears, this generation. They have a big fear of rejection, probably because of what you said with clicks. They will cancel out of a YouTube video if it doesn't load within 2 seconds, right? Mm. So that's how quickly we can lose somebody. They were born in a generation of, if you say something I don't like, I can just delete you. Like, you're blocked. I don't have to deal or face any of my conflicts. So I know that they are highly sensitive and really quick to give up. So what they need is people who are committed to building relationships and modeling that for them. And that's not done overnight, right? Yeah. Like, this is a journey. And like, so one example of something that I've tried to do at Andrews, and I know that the only reason we have Vespers is because I did this. I told my classes, all of them, hey, I'm going to have breakfast in the cafeteria on Thursday mornings at 9 a.m. If you ever want to join me, join me. I don't want any of my students, and this is what I tell them, I don't want any of my students to have to eat alone.
Wow.
Unless you want to, right? So Thursday mornings, you can find me. The first time we did it, maybe 3 showed up, then 10, 7, 8. But from that, I developed a core group of students that then have now like been messengers for me on campus. And I think that's what I'm saying when I say we have to allow them a seat at the table. I do not plan the Vespers. They do it. I show up with, I use my credit card and buy the pizza and I show up, but they plan every single Vespers that we've had. I have never planned it and I've never led one. I don't even lead them. They do it and they find people to sing. They find people to do slam poetry. They want a space to feel like they're included and involved. But I think often if we let them have it, we tell them what it has to look like. Yeah. And that's where then we lose them, because remember, if you offend me, I'm out. So can we, is it, and I think that this is probably dependent on your church, and you probably can't do it at every church because you know the members that are in those churches. Sometimes, right. Truly, our church is not a safe space for people to just have these conversations, right? So then how do we create other subs, like, can you have them to your home? Like, what does that look like for you? And I think that that's a really individual, it's not a packaged answer, and it's very complicated. But I just think we have to all, as adults, be committed to mentoring and shepherding this generation through. And saying, even if you choose to leave, let me walk that journey with you. And I think that's what they need to hear.
Appreciate that.
I'm hearing two themes come out, because again, I'm thinking, even though I'm in a large church, I'm always thinking about the small church, right? The pastor out there that has 40, 50, 60 members. And I'm hearing two things that are coming out to me that are really landing for me. Number one is the pastor doesn't have to be perfect in communication, right? Although I personally believe in the beauty of the art and science of communication and the power of preaching. And so I certainly aspire to, you know, make it as engaging as possible and all that. But nonetheless, much grace is shown. Number two, I'm thinking about the value and the idea, because you keep coming back to this idea of relationship, right? And how being in the value of it. And so I'm just going back to this really traditional kind of pastoral concept of kind of visitation and being with the people, right? I confess that, you know, when I used to pastor in the Florida Conference, I had two churches. One was kind of more progressive, more young adult. One was kind of more older folk. And I confess that I shied away. I won't say the word avoided, but I kind of shied away from the idea of kind of visiting, you know, as much. But it kind of sounds like what you're saying is, no, pastors need to be more amongst the people.
Yeah. Yeah. So let me say this, and this is like, studies have found that when it comes to your job, people who say they love their job and they want to work at their job, it's because they have a best friend at that job. Did you know that? It has nothing to do with what we do and everything to do with who we do it with. And this is what, so I'm a writer for the Barna Group, so I know I promote them a lot, but the Barna Group is really, they've hit this pulse of this generation, and they're trying to figure out how do we bridge this gap between their work life and their spiritual life, and what does that look like? Because this generation, for the first time ever, when we study them, only 1 in 5 young people is, when they say, what is your dream by 30? Only 1 in 5 says to have a family. Okay. 4 out of 5 say, I need a career. I need a good job. I need money. I need a house. I need to finish my education. So that's where their heads are at. And so I think we have to start thinking about, what does my faith have to do with my career? And they're looking for mentors in their careers anyway, right? So this is something that can be open to all the church members. Like, how do we mentor them through the workplace? Maybe I'm a doctor and there's 3 kids here that are pre-med. Like, what can that doctor do to establish a relationship with them about work? And then, by the way, like, I just get to know you and see that you're an awesome person and you're a man of God, and God is so attractive, right? Mm-hmm. So I see that and I'm going to be attracted to it. And then I'm more likely to stay at your church also because I have a relationship with you.
Wow. Powerful. You know, Heather, I think it almost seems very simple, but not simplistic, right?
Right.
in the sense aspect. When this episode is going to be released, it would have followed an episode with Caleb from Humans of Adventism, and he shared his story, and a lot of it had to do with everything that we're talking about here. And he came back to church. Now, he didn't really come back to church. I don't know if that's the best phrase, but just have, you know, mercy, you know, Caleb, if you listen to this, have, you know, mercy on that too. But He didn't come back because of the fog lights or anything of that nature. He came back because simply the pastor of that small church, they went out and they just talked. The pastor didn't even invite him back to quote unquote church, or didn't say, hey, how come you're not doing this or that? He was just interested in him. Mm-hmm. And so even Caleb will say, if you haven't had a chance to listen to the episode, he was waiting for the pitch, right? Here I am. We've sat down. Where's the pitch? When are you coming back? And at that point, it never came back. It was never there. He had a genuine interest in the individual. And so I use that as an example, I think, to what we're hearing here, is that no matter if it's a large church like PMC or a small church, I hear that along the same lines as, Rodley has spoken to, is the essence of relationship, right? That's why I say it seems so simple, but it's not simplistic, because as you said, Heather, this takes time. And here's the other word that I think Brené Brown kind of exploded the word and made it what it is. Not that we didn't know the word before, and that's the word vulnerability.
Yeah.
So, you know, we need to be vulnerable. Like, it's hard for me to be vulnerable about my stuttering. You know, I was made fun of my entire life because there it is. I stutter. And so I've had to work hard at not doing that. And so the only way that I made my friends growing up was through sports. Not that I was this great athlete, but I wasn't the worst athlete. I was like in the middle. So then I wasn't picked last, but I wasn't picked first. But it was a way that I could really relate growing up. I'm talking about elementary, junior high. Once I went to high school, it was a little bit, different. But nonetheless, that was it. It was relationships based upon what we had in common, which at that point was sports. So when we take that to the church world and the world that we're in, today, as I listen, to you, you created a space and are creating a space. Whether I think the breakfast thing, I wish I had that growing up. You know, my fear was, where am I going to sit at times? Because,
yes!
you know, friends, but I don't know, you know, I am type A. I am very, I'm an extrovert, but what people don't know, and I guess now they'll know, is that it's once I get to know you, the hardest thing for me is to initiate that initial contact because of my stutter. Once people get to know me, we're all good. You know, not that they'll like everything about me. Of course they won't, but we're good. We'll get to talk and laugh and I could, you know, do all that, but it's that aspect. But to have somebody there say, hey, I'm going to sit here in that context. And so relating that back to the church, you know, what if we created those spaces, whether a big church or small church? And that's why I'm going to conclude with this. I've seen in my observation, again, attending part of what I do, many different churches and being in such a large conference, we get to see the vastness of the differences. But what I've seen churches that are really doing well, they have a few things in common. They actually have strong communicator from the pulpit. I mean, whether we like it or not, some of the most growing, quote unquote, churches have some kind of a strong communicator from the pulpit, whether, you know, it's just there. Secondly, is that they've created a space where worship happens well, however that may look. And this is my observation. Thirdly, I would say is that they've created spaces outside of the immediate context of where they worship to have spaces that you're talking about. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And so, because it's like Andy Stanley, right? This all happens not in rows, but in circles. And so I think that it's not one or the other, it's both. What we've been at times really good at is the row part, like come to the row, but not at come to the circle.
Can I say something that fits really well with this that I think we don't understand? This is the loneliest generation in US history. Okay. Studies show that Gen Z scores 10 points lonelier than senior citizens. So we think that they have friends, but if you ask the average millennial, how many people do you feel like truly know you? Their average answer is zero, right? And we are wired to be in relationships with other people. We need them and they know that they need them, but there's so many complexities that we struggle developing authentic relationships with one another. And so we have to create spaces for them to do that.
Wow. I love this conversation. And again, I know, and I hope and pray that as those that will listen listen, I'm starting with myself, you know, again, in the last several years, I've really tried to do this with in my role with younger pastors, try to be a better listener, try to have stronger relationships. And this is what I tell people, and you can, both of you can speak into this because again, in a church like Rodley, where you're, you know, ministering at, there's too many people. So you can't minister to everyone, but you can minister to someone. And Heather, what you just said is phenomenal because think about it. We look at social media and then we see, oh, all these young adults or whatever, you know, they're experts in social media. They got to have a lot of friends. Look at them. I mean, they got 5,000 here, 10,000 here. But then hearing it from a person like yourself who is in the middle of all of this saying, actually, they may have all that, but they're actually really, really lonely. Because we need to have, and this is what I believe, at the end of the day, hey, I'm all for social media and all that aspect. We all need it. It's not going away. It's going to continue. But nothing, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong. I could be wrong. I'm just going to make a straight out statement here. Nothing beats face to face. I mean, here we are recording video conference and that's great, right? Now you can, if you have an iPhone, you can do 32 people at the same time, right? I think it's the new update. I don't even know how that works on an iPhone with 32 people on your screen, but I haven't done that yet. But maybe, Rodley, we can get 32 people and see what that looks like just for the sake of it. But ultimately, I don't think that's great. And we use all that. But tell me if I'm wrong. Nothing beats. And I love your example that you gave. Sitting down at a cafeteria or anywhere else with 7, 6, 5 people, whatever it may be, face to face, looking them in the eye and saying, how are you? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And this is something I talk about really regularly because I'm not like, so studies show that it's 3 to 1 for every 3 online conversations we have, it's equal to 1 conversation face to face. So can we develop relationships online? Yes. Right. It just takes longer, but sure we can. But of course, because we are human beings, nothing can replace the, you can't get oxytocin, right? The love drug, the love hormone that makes me feel connected without looking at me. It's a here's the example I always use. There is a huge difference between my parents sending me an email that says, Heather, we are so proud of you. We love you. You are amazing. You're beautiful. We love your marriage. You're just such a great, strong woman, right? I could get that email and say, wow, thanks. There's a big difference between getting that email and my parents walking into my house, sitting on my couch, looking at me and saying, Heather, we are so proud of you. You are a strong woman. There's nothing beats that. And we know it. We already know it instinctively. So why we keep trying to swap it with technology, I don't know, because it's not the same experience. It just isn't. So I totally agree with you.
Probably. Hey,
just a quick follow-up, Javier. You said something, Heather, nothing beats face-to-face, right? Okay, I have to ask you something from a pastoral kind of evangelistic perspective. I was just hanging with some seminary students that I worked with at PMC this past week, and we were talking about, you know, we have a system to follow up with first-time guests that come to church, right? So we use what we call Connect cards, so they fill out if they're a first-time guest. And I was telling them how we have kind of these little stock emails that we send out along with a gift later on that week if someone is a first-time guest. And then one of them said, you know, what if instead of just sending an email what if you were to put up, you know, send them a little 30-second video thing where you mentioned their name, said, hey, Heather, this is Rodley. I noticed you were here this past week. Thanks so much for joining us. Hey, hope to see you again, or something like that. I'm just curious what you think about that.
I love it. I love it. I think that's fantastic. If you have the means to be able to do that, I think that's fantastic. Our brains are constantly scanning each other for social threats, right? And so there's a theory in communication. It's called uncertainty reduction theory. And essentially it says, what it says is the more uncertainty that I have about you, the less I like you. Right. So if I can see you, my brain is scanning you, I decide that you're a safe person to me, I am more likely to feel like I can go back to that church. So yeah, I think anything that we can do to reduce uncertainty is always a good thing.
Awesome.
And you know, there is something about, I remember somebody Snapchatted me one time, like literally out of the blue, or on Instagram, and it was just them and their face, and it was close to the camera, and I couldn't help but to think, wow, this just feels really intimate and close. And I could see their, like, part of their living room, and it's a little bit messy, but I remembered feeling kind of honored, right? That they would let me see them and their space. And so I returned the favor and I said, hey, Jason, or whoever it was. And then, you know, I was just like sitting on my couch, but anyhow, yeah, it kind of sounds like what you're saying there.
Yeah.
Guys, I really appreciate it. This has been a fascinating conversation. I almost feel like we may have to at some point in the year maybe have a part two here, maybe just bring in some more folks, because this is just some great content, great, you know, stuff. Heather, you've thrown some, you know, stats and information that I'm still thinking about, and I have to still process. And so I really appreciate your time and what you're doing and what you're bringing to the table and have been, you know, bringing. And so thank you very much for being on the Restore podcast.
Yes. Thank you guys so much for having me. It was fun.
And before we let you go, I know that, like you said, I was doing a little research. I know that you are releasing a new book. I don't know if by the time this podcast is released, there's my pause, right? I'm pausing there. Released, if the book will be released, but nonetheless, we should release this episode the first week of January, give or take, 2019. Now, it's hard to believe. So when are you releasing the book? Tell us a little bit about your latest book, and so that we can know, and we'll even help you out and give some away as well.
Oh, that'd be sweet. So my book is called Confessions of a Christian Wife. It releases in January. And I wrote it because, again, I'm on a big relationship kick. But like, studies show that 60% of people who are married are incredibly lonely. And studies also say that the greatest contributor to your happiness, outranking how much money you make, outranking the car you drive, outranking your job, is your relationships with other people. So I'm really passionate about talking to women about this issue and helping them use better communication strategies and just being vulnerable about myself and my own marriage to help us have better, happier, less lonely marriages. Yeah.
Awesome. And so that releases the 1st of January or the end?
I'm not sure. Okay. I just know they just send it to me once it comes out. It's through Pacific Press, but it'll be out at some point in the month of January. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So there'll be some information on the show notes about all where you can get that information. So make sure you guys check it out. And we'll be giving away a few of those books. And that also will be there on the exit of this episode. And so any last parting thoughts, Rodley, Heather, anything you'd like to say before we close up here?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I would say is that we spend a lot of our time thinking about our jobs and our money, and we don't spend as much time being intentional about our relationships. And I would like to challenge any listener that there's no greater contributor to your happiness. And there's a reason why this is the most depressed generation in U.S. history, because we're not worried about our relationships like we should be. And so I invite you to spend time really praying over those and asking God to help you improve the quality of your relationships.
Excellent. And for me, Javier, just the theological principle that Heather brought out, that the messenger is part of the message, right? That there's no escaping this relational aspect of it. So I know, I feel like I got to keep chewing on that.
Absolutely. A lot to chew on and a lot for me personally to continue to work on through God's grace. Thank you again, guys. May God bless you both richly.
Well, there you go. What a powerful conversation. I hope you were blessed and challenged by it. I want to thank Heather again for taking over time and giving us so much to process. Also, thanks to Rodley for co-hosting with me. As mentioned, we're giving away a couple copies of Heather's new book. As with previous giveaways, all you have to do is rate the podcast, let us know what you think, and email me at Javier, that's Javier.Diaz, D-I-A-Z, at floridaconference.com. The first two to email me, I'll send you the book for free. Thanks again for listening. Until next month, God bless you all.
Thank you for listening to this Restore podcast. We hope you've been blessed. Don't forget to subscribe so you won't miss any of our inspiring episodes.